which is the talking newspaper for Friday the 26th of August 2022. Hello, and welcome to the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper. I'm your presenter, Roy Faithful, and your readers today are Heather Thorpe-Tracy.
Hello.
Noel Thorpe-Tracy.
Hello.
And Jane Harding.
Hello.
If you know someone who's sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings of the Winchester Talking Newspaper and the Winchester Talking Magazine, or if you have a problem with the recording you've received from us, please contact us on 01962 861 229. And this phone number can also be found on the key fob attached to the memory stick. And if there's a problem with your sovereign player, please try plugging it in and recharging before returning it as faulty. Now, the main headlines this week are: excavation hailed as extraordinary, customers angry as business closes, and celebrations for college students on results day. Oh, may we have the story behind the first headline, please, Heather?
Excavation hailed as extraordinary. Hyde 900 have just completed its sixth community dig in Winchester and has hailed the results as extraordinary. Blessed by excellent weather and huge local interest, the event attracted more than 140 diggers of all ages. The search in three gardens on the site of Hyde Abbey, the last resting place of Alfred the Great, took place in King Alfred Terrace, an area which had been the location of the cloisters and abbot's lodging of Hyde Abbey. This year the dig had the added excitement of the possibility of locating a lost cellar, rumoured to exist in one of the gardens. And the dig also returned to a garden where the 2020 excavations uncovered the remains of a two-storey building with a major find of 5 kilos of medieval window glass, currently being evaluated at Historic England. The third garden was the likely site of part of the monks' refectory. And the find of the event was, without doubt, the discovery of the rumoured cavern, which was likely to have been the main channel for the medieval water supply to the refectory kitchens and infirmary of the abbey, as well as the latrines associated with the monks' dormitory. Another important find was an additional wall in the large two-storey building with a huge hearth, possibly associated with a kitchen, to provide warmth to the building. A major wall was found in the third garden, adding to the understanding of the layout of the monks' refectory. All three gardens yielded large numbers of finds, including Roman pottery, medieval tiles and other building materials, as well as a large number of oyster shells and bones. Visitors to the dig included the mayor and Professor Martin Biddle, who has taken a keen interest in the progress of the Hyde 900 digs over the years. And Professor Biddle said the discovery of a sophisticated example of a vaulted channel, probably late medieval, is extraordinary. The channel would have distributed water from the mill dam to the abbey's inner precinct buildings. The dig was supported by a grant from local estate agents Belgarum, with graphic design from Adam Architecture and the loan of equipment from WARG. The digs could not have taken place without the enthusiastic loan of their gardens by householders of King Alfred Terrace. Further details and information about the dig, including a presentation on the find of medieval glass, will be a part of the forthcoming King Alfred weekend, which takes place from October the 20th to the 23rd. Hyde 900 is the name initially given to a programme of community-led events designed to mark the 900th anniversary of the foundation of Hyde Abbey, the burial place of King Alfred the Great. And more information on this event and on Hyde 900's activities is available online on www.hyde900.org.
Thank you. Noel, have you got the second headline story, please?
Yes, customers angry as business closes. Frustrated customers have been questioning if they will get their money back from unfinished jobs after a Winchester business closed. County Windows ceased trading on July the 28th, with some customers having paid deposits on work that was never completed. The business in Eastern Lane, Winnell, specialised in conservatories, doors and windows. One customer, Amir Karkova, paid £20,000 towards an £80,000 extension to his house in Reading in March. Now he's trying to find out if the company was solvent when he paid the deposit. Mr. Karkova said, "I paid that money in good faith. I want to know if they were solvent when I paid them the money. I will be writing to one of the directors, Jill Monk, to find out what I can. It's caused immense stress, particularly at a time when cost of living is rising. I was initially asking to pay a lower deposit, but they insisted on £20,000 minimum." According to Companies House, the directors of the company are Peter Hall and Jill Monk. Another customer, who did not want to be named, had paid nearly £500 for a replacement front door at a property in Bishop's Waltham. The customer paid the deposit of £473 on July the 9th. She said, "A man came to the house and said that we weren't able to pay by credit card as the machine wasn't working, so we had to pay by debit card. He was keen to get the money quickly and start the work quickly. When a surveyor didn't come to the house, we called the company and an employee told us that they'd gone bust. I feel so sorry for the other customers who have lost larger sums." A Winchester resident had new windows installed at his house and had ordered a new front door. However, the company ceased trading before the door arrived. He paid £14,000 for the job, with £4,000 still outstanding. He said, "I was very pleased with the work they had done up to that point. However, the door was delayed. They'd completed the measurements for it, so presumably it's in a warehouse. How do I get it?" A former sales contractor for County Windows, who asked not to be named, told the Chronicle that he was bitterly disappointed in how the company was handled. He said, "Some staff got money, but all the contractors, including me, were unpaid. The law in the UK is laughable. They're allowed to do this." He explained that he had been trying to help former customers in getting in touch with suppliers directly in order to finish jobs. The Chronicle has now spoken to 5 customers with unfinished work, and it's unclear how many more have been affected. According to Companies House, the business is still active. On its website, it says that a company can be struck off the register if they believe it isn't in operation. Before striking a company off the register, the registrar is required to write 2 formal letters and send notice to the company's registered office to inquire whether it's still carrying on business. If they're satisfied that it's not, they will publish a notice in the London Gazette. If the registrar sees no reason to do otherwise, they will strike off the company not less than 2 months after the date of the notice. County Glass, which is based next door to County Windows, has been a separate company for 5 years and is unaffected by the closure of its neighbour.
Let's have the third headline story, please, Jane.
And that is celebrations for college students at Results Day. Peter Simmons College students celebrated opening their results last week, with almost all passing against a national backdrop of underperformance. Nationally, top A-level results were down, but university admissions were almost a record high. Peter Simmons saw 99% of students pass, with 40% of those being A-star and A-grades. Students opened A-level, B-tech and T-level results on a humid morning at the college. The new T-level qualifications saw results for the first time. The qualification involves students spending part of the week on work placement alongside their studies. John Diedrich, 18, of Bradley Road, Winchester, secured a place to study aerospace engineering at the University of Birmingham, having gained A stars in geography, maths and his extended project qualification, EPQ, with an A in physics. He said, "My excitement levels are really high. I'm just relieved that I've got the grades and I have all the options open to me. I'm very excited to move out of home and be independent and study a full course on things I'm interested in. I was really worried that I might not get the grades because aerospace is really competitive. It's just a relief that all the hard work I've done over the past 2 years has paid off. My motivation was low during lockdown. My productivity wasn't great, but when we came back, I really got my head down and refocused. There are so many distractions in lockdown. Online learning was a bit difficult and a lot of people struggled. Leonie Rowe, 18, from near Romsey, is going to study classics at Durham, having achieved A-star grades in Latin classics and EPQ with an A in history. She said mock exams had helped her prepare for the exams, as her year had missed out on sitting exams for their GCSEs. The teenager said, "It was hard to begin with, as half was online and it was a struggle to make friends. But this year has got much better and the college has been really helpful, having people to talk to. They even brought in a mini zoo to help us deal with stress." On her results, she added, "Oh, I'm really happy. It's so nice to have it confirmed and know I'm going somewhere in September. It's a really nice feeling." Josh Brooks, 18, from Basingstoke, got a triple distinction star in sport BTEC, which involved sport coaching and psychology. He said, "I couldn't have asked for better. I'm so proud. The teachers at Simmons were very supportive. We started in 2020 with online classes, which were actually quite good." Josh is now heading to Bath University to do sport management and coaching. Lena McQuillan, 18, got double distinction star in BTEC IT and a B in A-level psychology. She said, "I'm overjoyed and delighted at how I've done. A brilliant journey with a great end." Lena is going on to study eSports at Staffordshire Uni. Ben Macken, 18, got an A-star in maths and A's in further maths, chemistry and computer science. He said, "Online lessons were tough at the start, but I'm so pleased with how I did." He's heading to Royal Holloway in London to do computer science. T-levels are new two-year courses, broadly equivalent in size to three A-levels. Launched in September 2020, these courses have been developed in collaboration with employers and education providers so that the content meets the needs for industry and prepares students for entry into skilled employment, an apprenticeship or related technical study through further or higher education. Molly Lemon, 18, from Rownham's near Romsey, studied T-level childcare and education and achieved a distinction. She worked at Halterworth Primary School for 2 days a week. "It was really good to get the experience in the school." Molly is going to study primary education at Winchester University. Issy Longley, Meggie Holt and Claudia Smesky got distinctions in childcare T-level. Issy, 18, from North Baddersley, was offered a teaching assistant job at North Baddersley Infant School after a work placement there. She's going to Reading University to study primary education. Megan, 18, from Winchester, also got a job from her placement at St Peter's Catholic Primary School as a teaching assistant. She will be going to Winchester University to study primary education. Claudia, 18, from Southampton, worked at Shirley Warren Primary School and is applying for jobs in nurseries. She had a particular interest in SEN and autism. Aaron Fremantle, 19, of Middle Road, Southampton, arrived at results day after working a night shift at an Amazon warehouse in Totten. He got two B's and a C to get into the University of Southampton to study medicine. Aaron said, "I was quite pessimistic before today, but I'm so happy I got into university. Online classes were good, but I much prefer them in person." Principal Sarah Russell said, "This year group has had an educational experience like no other. The first to have its GCSE exams cancelled and the first to be asked to sit full A-level examinations and all sorts of COVID arrangements to navigate in between. Against a national drop in A-level performance, we are proud that we have bucked this trend, and our students' grades are as high as last year. Indeed, the proportion of A-stars grades has actually increased, with almost 1,000 securing this top grade. And this is accompanied by two pictures. One is of a little group of this new T-level students, who've had to work as well as studying. And in the middle, the girls are all there holding up their certificates. But in the middle, there are three girls all holding little babies. And I imagine they were the ones that were doing the childcare as their 2 days working. And the other one is a group of Peter Simmons College students. I think it looks as if they were, a lot of them, the ones named in the article, all with their hands up in the air, looking very pleased and proud of them. And with them is the principal, Sarah Russell, in a long pink dress, who actually looks about the same age as the students, I would say. But she's obviously also very pleased with those results.
And that's all the headline stories. Now we'll continue with death notices, then Christian comment, followed by letters to the editor, letter from Westminster, Belgarum diary, first person, and editorial comment. And we'll end with items of general news. And I'll start with the death notices. Bickley, Anne Louise Bickley, peacefully, only 54 years old. Day, Norma Day, peacefully at home. Ealing, Peter Robert Ealing, at the Wichita Hospice, aged 101. Fellows, Venetia Anne Ney Moorhead Fellows, peacefully at home, aged 68. Flesher, Mary Flesher, peacefully. Janes, Teresa Janes, peacefully, at Abbots Barton Care Home, aged 94. Lynch, Joan Marina Ney Munt Lynch, peacefully, aged 91. And finally, Picard, Jane Picard, peacefully at the Countess of Brecknock Hospice. And Jane was a member of the Winchester Talking newspaper groups. She edited and she also helped with the memory stick preparation. And now we'll go on to Christian comment, and it's with you, Heather.
Rosemary Baker writes that silence is golden. My first experience of a silent retreat was how noisy it was. My day at a local abbey as part of my ministerial training was a completely new experience for me, a hymn-singing Methodist. The plan was that as part of our training, we should experience different forms of worship and spiritual practices. I was, of course, familiar with silent pauses in prayer, but to be completely silent, well, in terms of speaking at any rate, for a prolonged period, was completely alien to me, nor had we had any explanation or preparation for it. Assembling in the refectory for our first meal, I was struck by the noise of the clattering of cutlery and plates, and all the people around me seemed to be eating and drinking very noisily. There was also somebody reading aloud, some thoughts for us to meditate on, but I found concentrating on what he was saying very difficult because of the noise around me. In all the world's religions, silence has been a central part of spirituality. It has even been claimed that silence is the language of religion, not hymns. This claim is supported by the fact that silence relates to many religious practices, such as prayer, meditation, monastic and convent life, and retreats of silence. Looking at the Christian religion, there are many Old Testament references to silences and quietness. In the New Testament, Jesus himself is often found going off quietly on his own to pray. Silent prayer is a way of communicating with God by opening ourselves to receive his word, listening to God, and not just speaking to him. Meditation has long been accepted as a way of doing this. It's often confused with mindfulness, which appears a lot in the literature on mental health and dealing with stress. Indeed, they can overlap. Meditation is the awareness of no thing, whereas mindfulness is the awareness of something. They can enhance each other. The World Health Organization has said that our world is far too noisy and this is harming our health. So there could be other benefits to silence besides being a religious practice. Or perhaps it could be said that religion is good for our health. These days, people go in search of quiet in all sorts of places. They join monasteries for a silent retreat or head to the hills for a weekend's peace. There's even an increasing trend for spending time in sensory deprivation or flotation tanks, if you can afford it. Mind you, this seems very extreme. Perhaps headphones would do the trick. Silence has been called the new luxury, but one that has been proved scientifically to be of value.
We'll continue with letters to the editor. If you wish to contact the Hampshire Chronicle, the telephone number is 01962 860 836. The email address is news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk. And the written address is the editor, 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO238AL. 7 letters this week, and we'll start with Noel reading one.
Yes, first one from Anne Jones, headlined Gymtastic. I again write about the excellence of the New Energy Gym, which during lockdown supported its members brilliantly. Now it continues to help those in all aspects of physical care and enhances confidence and mental stability, especially those older people with balance problems and injuries, some of whom have been immobile for some time and finding it difficult to walk again. The fascia stretching is so great for all of the above. I have personal experience of its benefits, and my 94-year-old father is seeking Debs Wilkes, the specialist in this area, to help with an ancient football injury which is causing balance issues. His doctor said nothing could be done. If the NHS, etc., looked into this wonderful exercising, maybe people older and not so old may not fall so frequently. Thank you, the family at the New Energy Gym. That's Anne Jones, Felmer Drive, Kingsworthy.
And Martin Holmes writes, Professor Adam, and I believe that's Adam the architect, Professor Adam has helpfully highlighted Winchester City Council's new consultation on opportunities for station approach, which it is considering with Network Rail and London and Continental Railways and its inadequacies. He also draws attention to the cost to council taxpayers of previous consultations on high-profile development proposals. According to its own figures obtained through a Freedom of Information request, Winchester City Council spent over £5 million net on station approach between 2015 and 2022, of which over £1.8 million was for consultations and external fees. To what end? Although a great deal of money, it is less than a third of the almost £17 million net spent on the Central Winchester Silver Hill project between 2010 and 2022, of which over £2.8 million was for consultations and external fees. And where has that got us? A slightly changed bus station and a modest proposal still in development for cosmetic changes to the existing King's Walk complex. WCC's track record on managing these major initiatives does not bode well for yet another attempt. We need some assurances that it is not about to repeat many of the same mistakes of the past. It would also be helpful to know how much WCC is spending on this latest consultation and the fancy website set up by MPC. The broad principles of the development of the city should be already set out in the local plan. As Professor Adams says, what is needed, and where council taxpayers' money might be more usefully spent, is a detailed consultation on purpose, scale and character of what might reasonably be possible and affordable. We are frequently reminded of the pressure on local authority budgets to make effective use of the area for the benefit of all the people of Winchester. It would also be helpful to know where the funds will come from for any substantive works that might eventually go ahead, and what assessment the council has made of the risks and potential costs of yet another false start. And that was from Martin Holmes, Caldwell Gardens, Winchester.
Dr. Michael Bennett writes about the sports centre. It's over 15 months since the new... Dr. Michael Bennett writes about the sports centre. It is over 15 months since the new sports centre was opened. Users of the centre have often given positive reports of the environment. The swimmers that I know are happy. I have myself used the gym and regularly attend an exercise class. In a first floor studio where the air conditioning works, fine. Unfortunately, this satisfaction does not extend to the whole building. If you have the misfortune to use the main hall, the adjacent squash courts, or the ground floor changing rooms, the experience is not pleasant and is a danger to health. The building does not have windows. It relies on an air conditioning system that has not worked for 15 months. It is very hot and airless. The main hall is used by the various racket sports offered by the club over 2 days a week. But during school holidays, space in the hall is given up for children's activities. At this time, table tennis is moved into the squash courts, which, with the smaller area, glass walls and no ventilation, makes the environment even worse. The City Council has spent tens of millions of pounds of our money on this new centre. But children and adults alike have to suffer this unpleasant and dangerous atmosphere. It also does not make business sense in the time of COVID. I and others have avoided the centre at times in case our holiday plans are ruined through infection. I guess there are many who will not return after one experience. Would the City Council please get this air conditioning problem resolved now? Dr. Michael Bennett, Fordington Road, Full Flood, Winchester.
Yes, and Kate McIntosh writes another letter about the station approach. I share Professor Robert Adams's low expectation of any fruitful outcome from the public consultation on the future development of station approach, Chronicle Letters, August the 11th. The firm employed to carry this out, Meeting Place Communications, bill themselves on the web as PR consultants. As we all know, the role of PR consultants is to persuade you to buy something you neither need nor want through a series of carefully angled questions, corralling you towards a predetermined outcome. I have a strong sense that we have been here before on more than one occasion. The one exception to the prevailing mood of cynicism towards such exercises was the thorough and genuine public consultation carried out by John Thompson and Partners for the Central Winchester Regeneration Area, which commanded respect and admiration. And I agree with Robert that it shows great lack of judgment on the part of the present City Council that they have virtually jettisoned that promising piece of work in employing JLL to take it forward. As real estate and property investment consultants, JLL have a much narrower range of skills, lacking in any broad vision for the future. And that's by Kate McIntosh, MBE, RIBA, West End Terrace, Winchester.
This letter is from Tom Williams and David Small of the Winchester Dramatic Society. Congratulations to the Chronicle. Many congratulations to the Hampshire Chronicle from the Winchester Dramatic Society, the WDS, based at the Chesil Theatre, founded 1863, so only 150 years as part of city life. From our first production of Macbeth in St John's Rooms, the Chronicle has supported us with editorial, photographs and reviews. The unique archive of every edition can be viewed on microfiche in the Hampshire Record Office. We made extensive use of this amazing resource when, under the guidance of Elizabeth Rake, we were compiling our history, published in 2014. Indeed, it was the only source of information prior to 1932, when our own records begin. One problem with scanning the thousands of editions was being diverted by all the fascinating reports from across the world and the UK, as well as Hampshire. Reviews varied from the acerbic comment, "It had the attribute of brevity," when writing about the Deal boatman in 1894, to the enthusiastic 4,592 words on 77 Park Lane in 1932. As well as listing the cast of 34, they included the 28-strong orchestra names, programme sellers, stewards, all the committee, plus assorted helpers, 120 names in all. For the first 130 years or so, the only photographs we have are those taken by staff photographers. We're most grateful that we were given permission to use them. Perhaps the most apt comment from the Chronicle, and one we hope we live up to today, appeared in 1904. "They are a society full of vitality and are equally successful in the legion and variety of the plays they perform." So, thank you, and all good wishes from the members of the Chesil Theatre, which must include at least three of us here who also are members of the Chesil Theatre. May we both continue to inform and entertain the people of Winchester for perhaps another 250 years. And that was from Tom Williams, the president, David Small, the chairman of the Winchester Dramatic Society, Chesil Theatre, Chesil Street, Winchester.
"Dangerous cyclist in city centre," writes Nick Kay. "I am in the second half of my 60s and thankfully still fit and active. Recently, for the first time in a long time, I visited Winchester and had an enjoyable day out until near tragedy happened. I'd left something in my car, so returned to the multi-storey car park. On stepping out of the car park, there's a pedestrian crossing. Now, this was at 4:45 p.m. The traffic was busy, the cars on either side stopped at the red light, and beeper sounded ready to cross, so I started to cross. And unsighted, a cyclist flew past, inches in front of me, at about 20 miles an hour, coming from the city side. I can only assume he thought there was an annoying queue there that he could weave past without slowing down. I too am a cyclist, and very well aware of the life-changing consequences a collision at that speed could inflict. Fortunately, it was one of those near misses, which merely left the waiting motorists with their hearts in their mouths, and me able to carry on and being thankful." Nick Kay, High Post, Salisbury.
And John Cooper writes about not NIMBYs. "I read your recent article on Hampshire Chronicle online about approval for a planning application to replace a garden fence in St Giles Hill, and consider that the title and reporting gave the impression that the objections were from NIMBYs in St Giles Hill. You correctly state that there was an objection from the City of Winchester's Trust, but omitted to add that there was also full objections from the local ward councillor, Charles Ratcliffe, and the St Giles Hill Residents Association, which in its constitution has the power to represent residents' views in planning matters. Objections submitted by the City of Winchester Trust, the local councillor and the Residents Association were made reference to the St Giles Hill Neighbourhood Design Statement prepared by local residents and adopted as supplementary planning guidance by Winchester City Council in 2005, and more recently revised and adopted by Winchester City Council, WCC, in 2020. St Giles Hill Residents Association only objects to a planning application if it contravenes the policies of the design statement agreed by WCC. The proposal for a horizontal batten timber fence atop the existing brick and flint wall was basically the same proposal rejected in the planning officer's report earlier this year, as it was deemed harmful to the character and appearance of the conservation area. The fence clearly needs replacing, and nobody objects to the applicant wishing to create more privacy for her family. However, this property is in a prominent position in a conservation area facing a public space, St Giles Hill Park. The proposed horizontal batten fence conflicts with policy 4 of the neighbourhood design statement, which recommends open picket style fencing with vegetation as seen in the surrounding properties. It is disappointing that on this occasion the planning committee and planning officer chose to disregard the agreed supplementary planning guidance in the St Giles Hill neighbourhood design statement, and that there was no mention of this in the article. John Cooper, Chair, St Giles Hill Residents Association, Northbrook Close, St Giles Hill.
And that was the last letter to the editor. Thank you to all of the contributors. Now Jane has got another letter. It's the letter from Westminster.
And the letter from Westminster is from our Winchester MP, Steve Brine. Aside from the ongoing too-drawn-out contest to choose the next Prime Minister, there's only one story in town, and that is the cost of living. Pressures created by global events, including the rise of wholesale gas prices as a result of Putin's invasion of Ukraine, have reintroduced us to levels of inflation not seen since the 1970s. Learning about politics as a student, and even upon becoming an MP myself in 2010, inflation was viewed as a thing of the past, alongside widespread industrial unrest. Now, in 2022, the British disease is back and we need to do two things. Learn from history so as to not to make things worse, and come alongside the most vulnerable, as we did during the pandemic. Helping families in Winchester and Chandler's Ford with the cost of living is not about an expensive glossy leaflet or wishing it away with eye-catching gestures that merely delay the pain. It is about helping the millions of families who are struggling now while securing long-term economic growth again. And while there's more to come, and there will need to be as this week's revised energy price cap will show, it would be plain wrong to say there's no help this autumn and everything's on hold until the new occupant is inside number 10. We've heard a lot this summer about £37 billion worth of help, and it is real. Providing a £400 rebate on energy bills for all households tops the list, a cash grant that does not need to be repaid. This will be delivered by energy suppliers from October, with payments spread over 6 months, and yes, I am still battling on behalf of local park homeowners to ensure they don't miss out because of the way they often pay for energy. We're also delivering a non-repayable £150 cash rebate for homes in council tax bands A to D, equivalent to 80% of all households, helping both lower and middle income families. Every household on means tested benefits will also receive a £650 cost of living payment, so that's supporting the most vulnerable households. We then have £300 for pensioners in receipt of winter fuel payments and £150 for recipients of disability benefits. This will come direct via the Department of Work and Pensions. And we're injecting the £144 million of discretionary funding for local authorities to support households not eligible for the council tax rebate. Again, Winchester and Eastleigh direct this help. Remember Marcus Rashford? We're investing £200 million per year to continue the holiday activity and food programme, providing healthy food and activities for kids on free school meals. This has been so helpful to many constituents this summer, and I'll be arguing for it to be extended into the October half term. Finally, we must remember Hampshire County Council, which is providing additional assistance right now to those who are struggling to afford necessities such as food and fuel. Funds have been allocated to support the most vulnerable households in Hampshire with their fuel costs. Search Connect for Communities. That's all one word, connect, then the number 4, then communities. We must recognise it is impossible for any government to solve every problem. And of course, every penny government spends is your money. But there's a lot of help out there already and more is on the way. No one is alone in this. Please seek help and advice if you're struggling. And that was from Steve Brine, MP for Winchester and Chandler's Ford.
Time for alternative news. Yes, Heather's got Balgarham Diary.
I'm reading an item from Balgarham called End of Trail for Hares. And there's a marvellous picture of a flatbed lorry. And on the flatbed of it, there's a whole host of these weird hares that have been scattered around the city recently. And because they've been put on, so they all are looking off in the same direction, it makes it all look as if there's something absolutely fascinating going on the other side of the picture, which we can't see. End of Trail for Hares. The Hares of Hampshire are on the weirs, and leverets in the windows of the Theatre Royal, and the hares arriving in Winchester by lorry. The takeover of Winchester by the Hares of Hampshire ends today, August the 25th. The public art trail, featuring more than 30 of the hare sculptures, each with a unique artistic design, has graced the streets of Winchester and Southampton since mid-June. As well as the large hares, there have also been smaller leverets in Winchester public buildings such as the Great Hall, the Ark, the Brooks and Theatre Royal, and in Southampton, the Marlands and West Quay. They were erected by the Murray Parish Trust, the Alsford-based charity that raises money for improved paediatric emergency medicine across the region. The Trust worked with Wild in Art, which puts on public art events. There will be one final chance to see the hares at a farewell weekend on September the 9th to the 11th before they are auctioned off to raise funds for Southampton Children's Hospital.
This week's first person is by George Hayter, and Noel's going to read it.
Yes, George Hayter, and his headline is Minimise the Prices Crisis. Help, we're in an emergency. Inflation has reached 10% and our incomes aren't keeping up. Some of us are rich enough that our lives will be little changed by rising prices, but the poorest among us may be driven to despair by the cost of living crisis. Pensioners and single parent families are among those who could face hunger, cold homes or both, as they see their spending power eroded by inflation. Many of us are old enough to remember the scary inflation of the 1970s. I was quite poor at that time and had to take drastic action. Like many others, I survived by stamping down on spending. Hampshire, Britain and probably much of the world is awash with suggestions on how to get through inflationary times. Here is my contributions to the debate. My list of budgeting tips starts with obvious spending trims and ends with powerful mindsets which have helped me. So here goes. Fags and booze. Cut them out for a start. Toys. No child needs boxes and boxes of them. Netflix. Maybe a humble TV license provides enough programmes to enjoy. Big screen TV. Screen bigger than a tray. It's a luxury. Christmas. Give relatives socks or a fridge magnet. Choose one of these for your household crackers. Christmas mini tree, turkey or something else. You don't need them all to enjoy the special day. Rich or poor, being with family or friends is the important thing. Entertainment. Amuse yourself with free things only. When I was living alone with a mortgage, I spent some leisure time reading in the local library. It was a bit glum, but less glum than running out of money. Petrol. Reduce consumption by driving slowly, and more important, accelerating gradually. The more you press on the accelerator, the faster money flows out of your bank account. Heating. Wear lots indoors. Wrap yourself in a duvet to watch telly. Tattoos? Clothes and jewellery? Borrow, swap. Holidays? Stay with relatives. Borrow a tent. Walk? We once had a family holiday walking across the New Forest. Another time we enjoyed walking cross-country from Winchester to London. Takeaways. Cooking is cheaper, fun, and a chance to eat fresh veg. Own brand. Instead of buying consumables made by big-name manufacturers, go for the supermarket's own brand. Sometimes it can be almost unbelievably cheaper. Last week in a Tesco, I found Heinz baked beans at £1.35, while Tesco's own brand baked beans was just 45p. way less than half price, just a third, virtually the same product. If you are unsure whether to buy something, assess the deal from the seller's point of view. They'll be anxious to sell the product and will be acutely conscious of its weaknesses, such as high price. Seeing other people buying luxury foods and driving a flash car, it's easy to become disheartened. But remember, there are billions in the world worse off than you. Despite current prices soaring, we British have never been richer. Just 100 years ago, daily life for working people was an exhausting grind with no Netflix, no supermarket, no electricity and no running water. Even if you think you're poor, your ancestors would most likely envy your wealth. Everyone feels poor some of the time. Millionaires compare themselves to other millionaires and want more. If anything, millionaires seek bargains more than the rest of us. Charles Dickens famously contrasted happy people spending 95p of every £1 they earned with debt-ridden people foolishly spending £1.05 for every £1 earned. Spending less than you earn is undoubtedly the happy course. I've kept my greatest saving aid till last. When I cannot decide whether or not to buy something, I say this to myself. Not spending is the right answer. You won't regret it. P.S. Try to put aside enough money for health-giving fresh veg and fruit.
Jane's got editorial comment.
An editorial comment is headed with Hampshire Chronicle, published since 1772. A major milestone for this newspaper. 250 years ago yesterday, the very first Hampshire Chronicle was printed. In all the time since, it has only missed one edition during the general strike of 1926. And dare we say it ourselves, but that anniversary is a source of immense pride for the staff of this newspaper. Every week since 1772, a countless number of journalists have strived and toiled to produce an interesting and factually accurate record of what has happened in Winchester and Mid-Hampshire. We have tried to do that and largely succeeded 13,000 times. The first draft of history and every edition is available for inspection free of charge at Hampshire Record Office in Winchester. To celebrate, we have three offers and competitions, and the first of a four-week series of features by esteemed historian Barry Sherlock. On September the 22nd, we are producing a special eight-page supplement as a souvenir of this milestone. May we thank all our readers for your continued support.
Well, here's something that's happening locally. There's a special trial touch tour to enable visually impaired people to experience some of the features and artefacts in Wichita Cathedral. And this is going to take place in the cathedral on Tuesday the 6th of September between 10:15 a.m. and 12 noon. Well, if you'd like to join the tour, and for further details, please call 01962 855 016. That's 01962 855 016. We've got an email address too, and that's Hatterkeith, that's Hatterkeith, Hatterkeith at googlemail.com. So that's Hatterkeith at googlemail.com. Lighting up time ends on Friday the 26th of August at 6:09 a.m. and begins at 8:05 p.m. And on Wednesday the 31st of August, it ends at 6:16 a.m. and begins at 7:54 p.m. We'll continue with further items of general news now, and we'll start with one read by Heather.
New £150,000 playground opens in Market Town. Children in Alsford celebrated the opening of their brand new playground, fitted with wild adventure-themed play equipment, when, on Saturday, August the 6th, New Alsford Town Council opened a brand new playground in Stratton Bates Recreation Ground, based on ideas from local school children. There's a picture of Molly Boyd Platt, a pupil of Alsford Sun High Hill School, holding a microphone as she cuts the ribbon to open the playground, and she's being overseen by the Mayor of Winchester, Councillor Derek Green. Students St Perrins and Sun Hill had been involved from the early stages of New Alsford Town Council's project, putting forward their ideas to a community-wide consultation. And from more than 200 responses, an overwhelming majority of children asked for a wild adventure play theme, using natural materials to create some larger pieces of equipment as well as lots of slides. The new playground includes 4 slides, 2 main climbing towers, one of them very impressive indeed, 5 swings, monkey bars, a lovely crawl tunnel, 2 playhouses, and a sunken trampoline. The playground's £155,000 cost was covered by the Town Council's funds, together with donations from 3 of Alsford charities. A total of £19,000 was contributed by the Alsford Youth Association, the Pigs, and the Rotary. New Alsford Town Councillor Andy Sprott had thought the original playground was looking tired, so he led a working group through the renewal project. And Mr. Sprott said, "We concentrated so much of our resources on this one playground because it's in the geographic centre of the town. It's within walking or cycling distance for the great majority of Alsford's families." Speaking to a crowd of more than 100 people, he said, "The council aspire to carry out this project to a high standard and to make the playground a facility for Alsford to be proud of, and I hope that we have done that for you." He then went on to acknowledge the vision and generosity of Colonel Henry Stratton Bates, who in 1910 gave the land on which the playground is built to the people of Alsford to enjoy forever. The contractors were briefed to develop a playground that was exciting and challenging for children of all age ranges and for those with limited mobility, and encourages learning, creative and imaginative play. The Town Council has reused much of the old playground as possible, with pieces of pre-loved equipment being rehomed in the other 2 parks further out on the outskirts of the town.
And here's an article which provides a lot of background to the letter I read earlier about the fence on St Giles Hill. It says, "New fence approved despite objections. Planners have approved plans for a new garden fence despite objections from neighbours in Winchester. Polly Lane applied for a replacement wooden fence at her property on Northbrook Avenue, St Giles Hill. The City Council received submissions from 4 objectors who said it was out of keeping with the area. Also objecting was the City of Winchester Trust, the local preservation watchdogs. Due to the number of objections, the matter went before councillors on the planning committee. Ms Lane proposed replacing the trellis-type fence with a new structure made of horizontal timbers. At 1.8 metres, it will be the same height. She said, she told the planning committee, "There will be a lot more privacy. The current trellis is very open and you can look from the public highway straight into the garden. I have 3 small children and would like a bit more privacy. I want to bring the house from the 1800s and make it a little more contemporary. The fence will suit the house." She told councillors that complaints were that the style was out of keeping, but she said the St Giles Hill area is a mix of styles, and the next door house, Park House, is extremely modern in design. "In time, clematis and jasmine will grow up and cover the wall," she said. The committee voted unanimously by 8-0 to approve the plan.
And here we have competition winner crushes car. A competition winner from a local country show was given the chance to crush a car at a vehicle recycling centre. After a speedy performance, dismantling a car in the quickest time at Curdridge Country Show, Luke Bairn from Botley won the opportunity to crush a car at Silver Lake Automotive Recycling in Shedfield. The competition's aim was to highlight the centre's You Pick It Yard, where the public can come and dismantle their own car parts from their old cars. The carpenter and joiner crushed a Ford Focus into a compact block as his prize for winning the time trial on the morning of Monday, August the 15th. Luke, who owns LB Shepherd Huts, said, I was very excited. It's a bit of a strange thing to do on a Monday morning. It was good fun. It was carnage in the yard. It was a bit like robot wars, watching the diggers rip everything to pieces. Oh, pretty mad. I had to use the trigger to fold the box over, whatever the technical term is, but I crushed it good and proper. I was surprised to see how strong it was. It didn't seem to struggle at all. My day job is not nearly as messy as that. There were a lot of car parts on the floor, but it was good fun. Tom Harvey, development manager of the facility, said, "The grab hands picked the car up and put it into the baler, and then it works on a remote control box, so Luke controlled the baler through the remote controls. Oh, it's a big boy's toy. It's nice for people to come into the business and see what we do. Locally, we've got a very strong brand. Everybody knows Silver Lake. But if you follow that up with a second question of, what do they do? That's not so easy for people to articulate. So actually, getting people on site to see Silver Lake in motion is great for us. We take our corporate social responsibility seriously. We do like to give back to the community, which is why we support things like the Curdridge Show. We also want to be an employer of choice, and that helps to showcase Silver Lake as a business, people who come to the show and see us." Marketing manager Amy Cross added, "It was great. When he was up there, he was like, oh my God, this is amazing, looking at what the other cranes were doing at the same time as what we were doing ourselves. And when you see parts removed with such ease, it just looks so simple and easy. He was so competitive on the day. He had 3 attempts to try and beat the time, and he was so excited like a little boy. So today was a nice thing for him to do." Luke, 32, dismantled a coil pack and 2 spark plugs from a Vauxhall Corsa in a winning time of 48 seconds at the county show in July. And this is, of course, accompanied by a photograph of Luke with his helmet and viz jacket on, sitting at Silver Lake Automotive Recycling Plant in Sheadfield, inside the recycling machine, surrounded by all the bars and knobs that he had to press in order to lift the car up and then completely crush it into a square box.
Community Cafe supports bereavement charity. And there's a pleasant picture of 4 members of the Knit and Natter group sitting at a table, clearly having a nice cup of coffee and cake in a lovely sunshine. A community cafe that supports a different local charity each month welcomed Winchester Bereavement Support to join them and to talk about what they do. Wanston Community Cafe raises money for a different charity each month. In July, the group raised £246 for Winchester Bereavement Support, a service providing trained bereavement visitors for people dealing with loss. Rosemary and Angela from the charity attended the July Cafe at the Victoria Hall in Sutton Scotney and spoke to many of the visitors about what they do. Janice Kinnell, who helps Margaret Sanford run the cafe, said, "We're following a week of record-breaking temperatures, our July cafe was held on a pleasantly milder sunny day. Visitors enjoyed their coffee and cakes outside in the sunshine, as well as inside in the cool of the hall. And this month we had many new visitors from neighbouring Mitchell Dever, as well as the local knitting group. We try to choose local, smaller charities, often those with a link to our volunteers, and are always happy to consider other requests. We do fundraising for national charities as well. The community cafe is very popular with locals and others from different groups and villages. We regularly have visitors from a ladies' cycling group, the Aqua Class from Norton Park Hotel, and friends from South Wanston. Due to many of the cafe volunteers being on holiday in August, the Wanston Community Cafe will resume at the Victoria Hall, Sutton Scotney, at 9:30 a.m. midnight until midday on September the 21st.
And it's worth saying that they have had one session supporting the Talking newspaper as well.
Pretty good.
I can't resist going on about playgrounds. I'm sorry. I've got playground closed for 6 months. A popular Winchester playground will be closed for 6 months whilst it's updated. Winchester City Council has announced that the planned refurbishment of Abbey Gardens playground will begin on Monday, September the 5th. Improvement works to Abbey Gardens play area will be completed in two phases. The first phase will involve replacing the existing path and removal of all play equipment and surfacing. Phase two will include the installation of new play equipment, surfacing and seating. The play area will be closed for approximately 6 months whilst works are underway. The refurbishments are based off of feedback from public consultations that invited playground users to say what they'd like to see in their play area. Leading on the recent public consultation, Councillor Charles Radcliffe, councillor for the St Michael Ward, said, "Our plans to improve the Abbey Gardens play area are now underway. The recent public consultation attracted feedback from many local children, parents and carers, and the final design of the playground should reflect their input." This has been an excellent example of collaboration in action, with special thanks to our local council officers who went to great lengths to capture the views of so many local residents, including some of our youngest ones. Councillor Paula Ferguson, Cabinet Member for Communities and Housing, added, "I'm really pleased to see this refurbishment getting underway. Abbey Gardens is such an important playground for so many children and families. The proposed improvements will make the playground both more accessible and a fresh and exciting place to play. Alternative playgrounds to use whilst Abbey Gardens is closed include Ferrari Gardens, a 10-minute walk away, and Oram's Arbour, a 16-minute walk from Abbey Gardens. The refurbishment is part of the Council's Play Area Improvements Programme. Works in the play areas at North Walls and KGV are also due to take place in the coming year. The public consultation took place in July and June, both on-site and online."
And here we have drop-in festival noise complaints. Winchester City Council has confirmed there was a significant drop in noise complaints at this year's Boomtown Fair. The festival welcomed 66,000 partygoers to the Matterley Bowl in the South Downs National Park over 5 days from Wednesday, August the 10th. Huge crowds turned out in temperatures upwards of 33 degrees centigrade for the music and theatrical festival, which showcased more than 500 artists from across the world. After two cancelled events due to COVID, Chapter 1 The Gathering saw the likes of Cool and The Gang, Fortet, Coffee, Nova Twins and more take to the stage as celebrations lasted into the early hours of Friday and Saturday morning. Civic chiefs said they had a dedicated noise team working throughout the event to ensure disruption was kept to a minimum. The council has since revealed that it received 10 complaints from residents over the extended weekend, almost half of that of the 19 received in 2019. A spokesperson said, "The council worked with the organisers before the Boomtown event to ensure the licence conditions and event management plan were adhered to. This helps us to ensure that disruption to local people is kept to a minimum. We had a dedicated noise team working throughout the nights of the event to manage these over the weekend. In total, we received 10 noise complaints, which will be discussed in our post-event meetings." Blistering temperatures posed a significant risk to those who joined in with the celebrations. The dry conditions also led to fears of a repeat of 2016, when a fire caused by a discarded cigarette butt ripped through 80 cars parked at the festival. But the council praised organisers for being well prepared for any such event. It added, "This year, a number of additional plans were put in place by Boomtown to deal with the health effects of the heat wave over the weekend, such as providing additional shelters for shade and water points across the site. Boomtown had a medical field hospital on site and provided welfare teams to aid anyone affected by the heat. Boomtown's firefighters were also on site at all times, and Boomtown kept Fettiful Girls safe from preventable fires by banning disposable barbecues and camping stoves and stopping firework displays, providing cigarette disposal and installing additional fire breaks and equipment across the site. And this is accompanied by a photograph of the large Matterley Bowl site, which was a site for the First World War soldiers to gather before they went abroad. Here, a very different site, which is a mass of beautiful colours, pinks, greens, yellows, purples, blues, lots of imitation buildings built on the site just for the festival, and lights shooting up into the air in all directions.
Marwell announces the second giraffe death this year. A zoo has announced the death of one of its giraffes. The giraffe, named Ursula, collapsed and died unexpectedly on Tuesday, August the 16th. And this is the second giraffe the zoo has lost recently, with Marwell announcing the death in June of Matilda, its oldest Rothschild giraffe. Ursula arrived at Marwell in 2011 from Woburn Safari Park and was among four female giraffes living at the zoo. A Facebook post published around midday by Marwell included a spokesperson from the zoo saying that, unfortunately, as the incident only occurred today and is ongoing, we are unable to comment further at this time. Once we know more, we will be looking to put out an official statement. We thank all our visitors for their support and understanding at this time. The second consecutive giraffe death sparked concern among the public on Facebook, and Marwell Wildlife posted, "Thank you for your concern and kind words. Our veterinary team and animal keepers are working together to establish more details at this time, and we will keep guests updated with more information. With regard to Matilda, who had died in June, following the onset of symptoms thought to be age-related, our veterinarians and animal teams made the difficult decision to prevent further suffering and euthanize her. Giraffes can live for between 20 and 25 years in captivity. So at 25, her age is a testament to the excellent care and attention she received from her keepers." The social media post on Ursula's death has received over 300 comments of condolence. And the zoo in Thompson's Lane has always homed giraffes since it's been open to the public. Marwell welcomed its first giraffe in October 1971. Following the latest loss, Marwell is now home to just three giraffes, Maked, Krista and Ruby, who were all born at the Coldon Common Zoo.
Man set to climb Kilimanjaro after a trio of tragedies. For Barry Preedy, 73, the last 18 months have been the stuff of nightmares. The Winchester resident has had to mourn the loss of three people he held dear with little reprieve. His wife of 33 years, Carol, died in February 2021 from pancreatic cancer. Carol, who was just 66 when she died, had only retired 9 months before. And Mr. Preedy said the pair had just started to make plans for the rest of their days. "We were looking forward to a long and happy retirement together," he said. "But you just have to carry on somehow, don't you?" Excuse me. Just a year later, in February 2022, disaster struck again. Mr. Preedy's younger brother, Nigel, died from a brain tumour at 70 years of age. To cap off a torrid period in the father of three's life, the daughter of an old school friend, Holly Wynne Jones, 20, died in her sleep in May. Deciding he wanted to do something to commemorate all three of their deaths, Mr. Preedy has since taken on the challenge of climbing the tallest freestanding mountain in the world, Mount Kilimanjaro. It was an awful year or so. Their deaths were three tragedies, which I wanted to mark in some way, he added. I did the South Downs Way walk last year in memory of Carol, but this time I thought I'd do something a bit more spectacular. I'm hoping I can do them all justice by making my way to the top of Kilimanjaro. Mr. Preedy said his family thought he was mad when he first told them his plans, but has said they've been very supportive of his efforts. He'll be flying to Africa in late September to start the climb, the same month he turned 74. The final stretch of the walk will see him arrive at the peak of the peak as the sun rises over the mountain, something he expects to be a special moment. As the date draws ever closer, Mr. Preedy has said his initial nerves have started to turn to excitement. He said, "At first I was quite apprehensive and thought, what have I let myself in for? But over the past couple of weeks, I've started to get quite excited. I think it'll be quite an achievement if I can accomplish it." In the meantime, he's fundraising for a trio of charities, Pancreatic Cancer UK, Cancer Research UK, and Young Epilepsy, all three of which are connected to the people he has lost. There's been so much attention given to deaths from COVID over the past 2.5 years that it almost seems that deaths from other causes get forgotten, he added. I'm doing this walk, despite my ripe old age, in memory of these courageous, strong and loving people who were also sadly missed by family, friends and all who knew them. May they never be forgotten.
And now Laurie's proposal is withdrawn. Campaigners against a recycling firm's proposals to take over an old fuel depot have been heartened by the withdrawal of its most recent planning application. However, they remain on guard amid fears they haven't yet seen the end of the business's interest. Romsey-based company So Recycle Limited recently lodged an application to store and operate heavy goods vehicles from the railway sidings in Mitchell-Dever Station. Residents say the move would have entitled as many as 40 to 60 large lorry movements a day down New Road and into Overton Road to access the major road network locally. People insisted the comings and goings would wreak havoc on the village and objected to the plans in droves. They say the proposals were intentionally flown under the radar in an attempt to force them through the back door, and gaining the backing of Steve Bryan MP, who demanded clearer communication from the company. However, a recent update provided campaigners with a well-timed boost in their quest to block the change. A spokesperson for Mitchell-Dever Parish Council said, "The Office of the Traffic Commissioner has confirmed to residents that So Recycle Limited have withdrawn their most recent application to store and operate heavy goods vehicles from the railway sidings in Mitchell-Dever Station." An initial application for the company to store four of its lorries at the site was given the green light, although it's unclear whether it will make use of that permission in the wake of recent developments. It is assumed that the earlier approved application for the storage of four HGVs is still valid, the council added. However, without planning permission to carry out activities on the site, the vehicles could only be stored here and no recycling activities could legally take place. Local City Councillor Caroline Horrell has been working closely alongside residents throughout their campaign. She says it's currently up in the air whether the recycling firm will return with a further application. "My anticipation is that there may be further applications going forward, but that's just speculation," she said. In the meantime, Councillor Horrell says she has posed a lot of questions to So Recycle Managing Director Bill Murray, who has been invited to meet villagers. "We have tried to encourage open communication," she said. "We have asked the company to share its intent for the site so we can respond accordingly. There is clear concern from a lot of people regarding the potential for increased lorry movements, especially with rumours circulating that it wants to base its office at the site. We're standing by our post, so to speak." Mr. Murray has been contacted for comment.
M27 cameras catch 35,000 cars speeding. Nearly 35,000 drivers were caught speeding on the M27 through smart motorway works, with nearly £1 million worth in fines imposed. Average speed cameras clocked some 34,667 drivers speeding at more than the 50-mile-an-hour limit in a three-year period between junctions 4 and 11. National Highways lifted the restriction in February this year. It was originally imposed in February 2019. Now, Hampshire Police data, seen by the Daily Echo, reveals the extent of speeding on the motorway stretch. Simon Gomer of the Joint Operations Road Policing Unit said the 50-mile-an-hour limit on the M27 was not just in place for the safety of all road users, but also for the safety of the workers operating along the motorway. The speed limit is exactly that. It is not a target. There is no such thing as safe speeding. And it may be more appropriate to travel at a lower speed, depending on the road conditions at any given time. Police said 13,234 people did not pay the fine, but instead undertook a speed awareness course over a period of a few weeks. 9,453 people were fined, meaning at least £945,300 worth of fines were imposed.
Mayor hosts event to mark Nagasaki bombing. The Mayor of Winchester, Councillor Derek Green, hosted Winchester's fourth Mayors for Peace event to commemorate the 77th anniversary of the atomic bombing of Nagasaki. More than 40 guests were at Abbey House on August 9th, representing the city and county councils, Winchester University, community organisations and faith groups. Mayors for Peace is an international non-political organisation with a membership of more than 8,500 cities and regions, including 85 in the UK. It aims to realise a world without nuclear weapons. Winchester joined in 2020. Councillor Green said, "I was delighted to host the event. I share the spirit of my fellow Mayor of Nagasaki in his message, I hereby declare to do the utmost to realise the abolition of nuclear weapons and everlasting world peace." Presentations included an experience of living through the bombing, read by members of SGI UK who organised the event. The University of Winchester showed the ginkgo saplings they are growing from seeds of trees that survived the atomic bombing, presented last year by the Mayor of Hiroshima to the Mayor of Winchester. These will be used in schools as part of a developing education programme. Peace Jam spoke of their work to inspire young people for the future. For former Peace Jam director Sally Milne, recalled the working with Professor Sir Joseph Rotblat, a prominent nuclear physicist who renounced nuclear weapons and became a Nobel Peace Prize laureate. Winchester's City of Sanctuary movement highlighted how conflict is driving refugee flows all over the world and raised the frightening prospect of nuclear weapons being used in the war in Ukraine. The event ended with a song from the Ukraine choir and a determination among everyone present to work more closely together to do everything in our power to ensure that the second atomic bombing of Nagasaki will be the last experienced by humanity. John Blackstone, Director of Faculty Operations for Education and the Arts at the University of Winchester, said, "It is a great honour that the university can help to nurture these saplings and create a suite of materials that will bring the themes around the ginkgo tree's survival of Hiroshima, global peace and environmental awareness into a format that is accessible and appropriate for primary school children."
A non-alcoholic bar attracting attention in Winchester. A Winchester drinks lounge with a sustainability ethos has recently begun to take the limelight. Proudfoot & Co. in St. Thomas's Street in the city centre was shortlisted by Drinkaware and has been featured by Fentimans, the botanical beverage brewers, for their non-alcoholic drinks menu. Founded before the pandemic, the lounge offers drinks which are locally and naturally sourced and brewed in-house with techniques derived from old textbooks. Egan Proudfoot, founder and owner of the business, used to work in the food industry in London before he chose to work in Winchester to open his sustainable bar. He said, "Winchester is a lovely bubble and we've got a lovely group of independents here. I usually describe ourselves as just a drinks lounge combating climate change by looking at the past. I don't harp on the non-alcoholic side too much. Either you're buying some sort of a fruit juice or a non-secco or a no-teeny." And this is accompanied by a photograph of the very attractive-looking Proudfoot & Co. in St Thomas's Street, with a big glass window and a light shining into it, and the owner standing outside with his colleague there, and also a large photograph of one of the drinks, which looks absolutely delicious. A lovely glass on a little wooden tray with ice cubes and a creamy lemon colour and a straw and a beautiful little herbal spike popping out of the top of it.
Significant rise in the area's bee population. A national park's bee population is buzzing thanks to the success of an ongoing wildflower initiative. A 72% rise in recorded bee populations and other pollinators has been recorded in the South Downs National Park following the introduction of projects to grow the wildflower meadows. The National Park, which stretches from Winchester in Hampshire to Eastbourne in East Sussex, launched the Bee Lines project 3 years ago to create a network of wildflower corridors to encourage the vital ecosystem engineers. The park said early reports show that biodiversity has improved in the new wildflower oases, with one area at Sompting in West Sussex recording significant increases. Peter King, director of Ouse and Adur Rivers Trust, said the funding from the South Downs National Park Trust has allowed us to create 2.5 hectares of wildflower meadows on Sompting Brooks.
Pub reopens after 3 year closure. A pub at the heart of Swanmore community has opened again after being closed for 3 years thanks to its new owners. The Hunter's Inn on the corner of Droxford Road and Cott Street was closed in 2019 when the owners declared it was uneconomic to run. Swanmore couple Pam and Stuart Elliott took over the pub in March 2020, prior to the country going into lockdown. Over 2 years on, the pub is now back in business after its grand opening on Thursday, August 18th. Co-owners Pam and Stuart were overwhelmed with the support they received on the opening night in Swanmore, with more than 200 people in attendance, some travelling as far as from Kent. Stuart said, "It's a wonderful feeling. Last night was more than a surprise for all of us because of the number of people that came and the number of people that commented on the quality of the pub and the renovations that we've managed to achieve whilst keeping the original feeling of the pub. This pub is very important for Swanmore. We hope that people will feel very much at home here and enjoy good service and good food. There's a genuine feeling in the village that it's part of the fabric of the village and they genuinely wanted it back." Retired Swanmore teacher Mike Noble was honoured with helping to cut the ribbon to mark the pub's reopening. He said, "Swanmore is not Swanmore without the Hunters." Upon arrival, guests were offered canapés and prosecco before the bar officially opened at 5:30 p.m, an hour earlier than planned due to popular demand. Manager Mark Fowkes was busy serving all night. He said, "It was really busy, it went really well, and everyone seemed to enjoy themselves. They drank it dry. Everyone was in good spirits, and it was a very, very good night." The historic Hampshire pub now employs 20 staff members, with food service starting on Friday, August the 19th evening, to help the employees settle in. Stuart added, "We've been very fortunate with the staff. Everybody said it would be difficult, but we've been very lucky to get the quality of staff that we've got. Everyone spoke very highly of them last night, so I'm very pleased. It was one of those unusual evenings when you couldn't believe it all. We're sat here now still trying to analyse it all." Ahead of the event, Stuart looked into a band that was born at the pub under the stage name Hank Dalton. Their lead member passed away a few years ago, but his family were delighted to come along with the revived band and play some country and western music. Family member Teresa Hibbard commented on Instagram, "Fabulous night and such a surprise about the band. I can't believe how much everyone remembered Hank Dalton. Was so lovely. Can't wait to come back." And it clearly was a lovely evening because there's a big picture of whole crowds of, mostly women, whole crowds of people all looking really cheerful and happy. And then outside tables, which are full of people as well. It was a good evening, that was.
Now students accuse a uni place after family deaths. A student who pulled out of college after the death of his brother before going on to study again while working as a carer through the pandemic and helping to look after his dying grandfather, has won a place to study medicine at university. Aaron Freemantle of Southampton achieved B's in maths and biology and C in physics after studying A-levels at Peter Simmons College in Winchester, and has secured a place at Southampton University under a scheme to widen participation in medicine. The 19-year-old described himself as someone who does what needs to be done to achieve his goal of being the first in his family to reach university. He said, "My parents are extremely proud of me. I'm the first in my family to go to university. They never went to college, or my two sisters and three brothers." Mr. Freemantle first attended Peter Simmons College in September 2019, but withdrew after 4 months after the death of his 26-year-old brother Daniel. He took a job as a care assistant at a home for the elderly and was faced with the challenges of working through COVID-19 pandemic before he started his studies again in September 2020 while keeping his job in the evenings. In early 2021, he helped provide care for his grandfather, Kenneth, at home before he died at the age of 91. Mr. Freemantle said, "It's all a bit of a blur, just how I got through it. You just go to college, do your homework, went to work in the evening, went to sleep and repeat. You just get on and do it. I'm not a motivated person, but someone who does what needs to be done." Mr. Freemantle said he was insanely excited to be going to university and added, "I've had everything to face, but I did it, and that's the main thing." And there's a very excited and happy-looking photograph of Aaron Freemantle surrounded by a huge cluster of blue and silver and gold balloons.
Rivers under stress, say trusts. Hampshire's Wildlife Trust has voiced fears about the impact of the drought on the county's famous chalk streams. Last week, the Hampshire Chronicle reported how the River Dever is drying up and that Stoke Charity Pond is at its lowest level in decades. Pond owner Ruth Guy spoke of finding dead fish in the pond and kingfishers desperately trying to find food in the mud. Martin de Rotiero, Director of Nature Recovery at the Trust, said, "The unusually hot and dry period this year has put our chalk rivers under significant stress. Wildlife is suffering. These rivers are especially rich in wildlife because of the high-quality, oxygen-rich, spring-fed water that create consistent flows throughout the year. But the lack of rainfall and unusually hot temperatures has compounded the effects of water abstraction by water companies, depleting the aquifers which feed important rivers like the Dever. Low flow conditions further compounds the effects of pollutants and is also leading to algal blooms and high water temperatures. For decades, investment in sustainable water supplies, efficient infrastructure and reducing leakage has been severely lacking. Globally renowned chalk rivers are not resilient to the changing climate. They're being pushed to tipping point by unsustainable water abstraction and pollution. In July 2022, England experienced just 35% of its average rainfall. It was the driest on record in East Anglia, South East and Southern England. Christine Colvin of the Rivers Trust said the hosepipe ban is a necessary short-term measure in many areas of the South and East of England because we're under extreme water stress, but we need to start thinking about developing much more strategically things in the future long-term measures. Historically, water companies have relied on being able to take water from rivers and aquifers whenever they need. But our rivers will die if that continues, under the conditions we can now expect.
I'm afraid that concludes the extracts for the week ending the 26th of August 2022. We apologise if you've encountered a delay in receiving this recording, but this has been caused by Royal Mail industrial action combined with the summer bank holiday Monday. Thank you to our editors for choosing the extracts, and thank you to our memory stick preparation, copying and dispatch teams. And of course, thanks to today's readers. Heather Thorpe Tracy.
Goodbye.
Noel Thorpe Tracy.
Goodbye.
And Jane Harding.
Goodbye.
And from me, Roy Faithful, thank you for listening. I hope you stay safe and well in the week ahead. When you've finished with this week's recording, please put the memory stick back in the wallet and please place the correct address label, the correct one, on the front of the wallet too, and return the wallet as soon as possible. Thank you and goodbye for now.